If you work for the government, the theory goes you make less than you would in the private sector, but you get better benefits. Does that still hold? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today we're exploring the arcane world of the financial services industry again. The issue? Defined contributions versus defined benefits. Did the state legislature do the right thing when it decided to stop the bleeding? Our number 1-800-478-8255 toll free. That's 478-TALK. Email talk at APRN.org. Pensions, the subject on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Guess who teens say is their most important influence when it comes to sex? Their parents. Listen up. Teens want to know what you think, even if they don't act like it. Talk with your teens about sex, love, and values. Nationwide, one out of every three girls gets pregnant at least once by age 20. Make sure your daughter isn't one of them. Visit stayteen.org for special parent tips and more information on how you can prevent teen pregnancy. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
It was 2006 when the state legislature decided to wipe out the pension system for state employees. Now, that doesn't mean that people who were working for the state suddenly wouldn't get a pension. What it meant was that as new people were hired, they would get a 401k. It's not called that, but it's a similar thing. And they would just get investment money for their retirement as opposed to the right to a pension when they retired. Well, a lot of things have happened since 2006, including the stock market tanking. Where do we stand with this situation now? There is an active push on to restore the state retirement benefits, to go from a what they call a defined contribution to a defined benefit system. And this is what we're going to talk about today. The unions have kind of all joined together in a push to move this through the legislature. I don't know if it'll happen this year or not. But they call themselves the Alaska Public Pension Coalition. And with us today is Derek Shure. He is an Anchorage policeman and president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Derek.
Good morning, Steve.
So tell me from your point of view as a policeman, does it appear to you that this lack of a pension is hurting recruitment and the quality of people that are coming onto the force?
Recently, we haven't had a problem recruiting or retaining people.
Of course, there's a recession on.
Right, that are coming in under this plan. The concerns that we have will be more in the out years that'll be approaching when these defined contribution plans become portable. We're concerned that a number of the employees might elect to leave and go to other departments and take their skills and their training and their experience with them.
So they're not portable yet?
Well, they are. They're fully portable from day one.
But they're not really very much in there for a while.
That's right. And what happens is over about a five-year program, the amount of the funds that are available to take with the employee escalate till they're what they call vested in the program. And at approximately 5 years, the employees have the ability to take all the funds with them when they depart.
And so it's really not known. Is there any like polling going on or anything like that to see, you know, what the feeling is? I mean, you're the president of the union. Do you have any gut feeling for what might happen here?
Well, I have a little bit better than a gut feeling. Recently, as a lot of folks know, the Anchorage Police Department elected to ratify a wage concession. One of the concerns from the newer employees that weren't eligible for the pension was, first of all, this would reduce their contributions to, quote, their 401k. The other problem that these employees faced is because of their benefits reduction, salary has an increased importance to them in comparison to the benefits that the other employees get. And what I ended up finding out was we were starting to see a rift in the bargaining unit between the employees that had access to the pension and those new employees that did not.
I guess that's completely understandable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. And we're talking about this business of what has happened to the state retirement benefits and whether it was a good idea. The legislature was faced with what they called an unfunded liability. This was not uncommon. Apparently, this happened with pension funds all across the country. And later on, we'll get some explanation for why that might have been. But they felt that they needed to stop the bleeding. And now I think there are a number of legislators say, well, we did stop the bleeding. But I wonder, do you think they did? It could be. At least there's an argument to be made, as I understand, that they didn't really stop the bleeding.
My understanding of the liability is it's associated with the people that were in the plan. Essentially, the plan was underfunded at that time. By changing to the defined contribution plan, the liability still exists. The other problem is I think it was kind of a short-sighted decision. In the case, in particular with police employees, it's very expensive to train and recruit these employees. It may cost as much as $100,000 per officer. If these employees end up leaving, once again, with these skills and training, we're actually going to end up paying more in the long run for each employee, regardless of the type of pension system that we have.
Derek, sure. I think the most interesting thing you've told me so far is that I think you've explained it very well, but the idea that we don't know yet how this is going to hit because people aren't vested yet. And it's when they become vested and they are able to transport their 401ks that's where we would start seeing this turnover problem that you're kind of worried about.
Yeah. I think it's pretty easy to predict that a lot of folks that don't have access to the defined benefits program that we're hoping to achieve here are going to leave. In the case of police departments, I asked some of my guys to go out and call police departments in the United States. They ended up contacting 66 departments in all 50 states, similar-sized departments in cities similar-sized to us. What we found was every single other police department had a pension.
Ooh.
And I think what you're going to find, and I think most people agree with this, is that market forces will act on the workforce. I'm not going to be a doomsday caller here, but I think it's pretty predictable to figure out that if you're the only police department of your size in the country that doesn't offer a pension, you can guess that your employees may end up migrating.
Well, as a union president, then, you can see why you really have no choice but to be a part of the Alaskan Public Pension Coalition. But I'm wondering about the collective bargaining. It would seem if there is a reduction in benefits, there should be an increase in compensation, maybe. Maybe that would hold them.
Well, that would be one way to do it. If you think about what people are talking about when they talk about a 401k type retirement system, generally it's employees maybe who work where there's some sort of profit sharing or maybe some sort of advantage during upturns in the economy, things like that. Of course, public employees are not eligible for anything like that. So in the sense of collective bargaining, yes, obviously we'd have to force more attention to the wage side of the balance.
Hmm. What do you think the prospects are? I mean, you're not a lobbyist, obviously. You're a union official. And a police.
Yeah, I'm actually just a dumb street cop that got put into this job by his friends, supposedly.
Do you anticipate going to Juneau? I understand the bills have been introduced. I'm not sure what the committee status is with them or anything like that.
Yeah, I started making trips down to Juneau during the last session, and that was an eye-opener for me. I've been in Alaska since the 70s and never been to Juneau, so it was a great experience. And I plan on going down this session, and I'm also planning on bringing members of the association, police officers, emergency dispatchers, and other personnel who should be in a pension plan down to Juneau to talk to the representatives.
Well, I mean, with the stock market having certainly had its troubles, does that work for you or against you? I would think that the lawmakers are going to be saying, well, this makes our unfunded liability concern even worse.
Yeah, I think it's easy in a downturning market to say that pensions or employee investments in the market are not good. But when the market's on an upswing, you never hear employers saying, well, this year we didn't have to contribute. Maybe we should use the excess for wages. So certainly during a downturn, I'd hear that. But I think we should all remember that the market kind of ebbs and flows.
Well, okay. At this point, I would like to turn to West Virginia, of all places. I believe David Haney is on the phone, the president of West Virginia Education Association. David, are you with us?
Yes. How are you?
I'm
the executive director of the West Virginia Education Association. Our president is Dale Lee.
Oh, I see. Right. So he's a teacher and you're not probably.
That's correct.
Yeah. So he has to go to work. and you stay in the office and run the union. I'm sorry for that.
Well, the president, we have a full-time release president. He is here every day working for the teachers and school service personnel in West Virginia.
Now, David, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on is that you came out of, before you took your current job, you came out of the pension management area. And I think that gives you some good background on this. And also because in the state of West Virginia, there actually has been a political reversal. In other words, they had defined contribution. I guess what, employees, the teachers had a choice as to which one?
Well, back in 1991, all employees hired after July 1st, 1991, went into the then new defined contribution plan, and teachers that were in the old defined benefit plan could opt to move into the defined benefit, the defined contribution plan.
And is this one of those states that doesn't have Social Security?
No, we do have Social Security. We do participate in that program.
Okay, and so I guess some did, right?
Well, there were out of the 23,000 teachers and probably about another 14,000 service personnel, there were about 4,000 people who transferred from the defined benefit plan into the defined contribution plan.
Well, all right. So how did they do when the stock market went down?
Well, we didn't get to that point. The problem here in West Virginia with the defined contribution plan, it was never properly administered from the day it began.
Oh, boy.
I think it's also very important to tell you that defined contribution plans in and of themselves were like 401k plans, were originally designed as supplemental pension programs and not meant to be your sole and only support at the time that you retire. I mean, even the documents that were prepared for the defined contribution plan here in West Virginia when it was established in 1991 said it was a supplemental pension program. So that's one thing you got to, I believe, you got to keep in mind. Secondly, this plan was only had 7 investment options. 2 of the options were mirror images of one another. So if the In fact, the one would you think you diversified your investments because you invested in both of them, and in fact you hadn't because they reacted to market conditions exactly the same way. There was absolutely no education program provided to the employees. Obviously, they're not investment experts. They needed to have an opportunity to know the difference between the different investment options that were available to them, risk tolerance, time horizon, et cetera. That didn't happen. Monthly, quarterly statements that were sent out were late, usually inaccurate. They only had one short window period when they could make changes in their investment options. And obviously, because of age differences, time horizons, et cetera, we all have different dates when we need to make changes in our in the investments that we may have. And so consequently, the whole system just didn't work. And we saw, as an organization, down the road that we had literally hundreds of and even thousands of people that would get to the retirement and not be able to retire. This plan just failed in every way, shape, and form. For a defined contribution plan to work and provide the best benefits for employees, you need to have a solid education program. You need to have accurate, timely reporting. You need to have a program that's properly administered. This program was not.
So it was changed.
What happened was the legislature at our insistence with the governor proposed allowing folks to vote of whether they wished to stay in the defined contribution plan or to move back to the defined benefit plan.
So they had that. So the ones that had started off when they couldn't get in to the defined benefits were given the option of being able to vote themselves in afterwards?
That's correct.
Okay.
That vote was taken in early 2008, and 78% of the participants in that plan voted. And by the way, there was about 18,990 people who actively voted, and 78% of them voted to return and or switch to the defined benefit plan. So there's still several thousand people, 4,000 plus, that are still in the defined contribution plan.
Yeah, if you were talking with David Haney, he's executive director of the West Virginia Education Association, by telephone from his office in Charleston, West Virginia. I want to go back to Derek Schur at this point. Derek, do you think that would work here in Alaska? I mean, we've only had since 2006 where people were no longer able to get defined benefits. Do you think the tactic that was used in West Virginia, where they were given a choice, might yield the same result here?
Yeah, I'm confident that it would. We have a number of employees who are maybe retired military that have come to the police department, and quite frankly, I don't know if they plan on staying for a full career. I would guess that some of those folks would maybe stay in the defined contribution type plan. Certainly,
they already have a military benefit.
Absolutely. The younger guys that we have and gals that we have are looking for 20 and 30 year careers. I think they would probably be looking to move over to a defined benefit type plan.
And so does this sound like something that maybe the whole public pension coalition could work towards in the legislature?
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea. I have a question for David.
Go ahead.
David, what classifications of employees were included in this program in West Virginia? Did it include police, fire, teachers, and other critical service workers?
No, in West Virginia, the plan was designed only for education employees and included teachers, administrators in public schools, as well as school service professionals, bus drivers, cooks, custodians, etc.
All right. Well, David, what would your advice be to the Alaskan unions that are pushing this? What do you think their best tactic is? I mean, we're seeing, for instance, that it takes 5 years to vest. We don't have those 5 years in yet, so you can't really say, well, we're hemorrhaging personnel.
Well, I think that absolutely. I think the whole idea of developing a coalition, since obviously there's a broader range of public employees and service employees involved in the Alaska experience as opposed to the West Virginia experience, I think the coalition is vitally important. I happen to be one of those people that believe that if we all solely rely on 401k type defined contribution plans for retirement, that we're going to have a whole generation of people in our nation who will not be able to retire, who will have to work well into their 70s in order to survive and to take care of themselves. Defined benefit plans is one of the things that in our nation that was established to build solid retirement that folks could rely on and could retire in dignity. And I think that the defined contribution plans, other than as a supplemental plan, are the wrong way to go. It's a good supplemental approach, but defined benefit plans need to be in place if we expect to have the next generation of workers able to retire and to retire in dignity.
But what about this unfunded liability?
Well, what we did here in West Virginia, but by the way, let me point out another thing that I should have said to you earlier about when the folks transferred from the defined contribution plan back to the defined benefit plan. It netted the state $22.8 million because the contribution rate in our defined benefit plan is higher than the contribution rate for the employee was in the defined contribution plan. We set out, in 1991, when this change was made, to pay off all unfunded liabilities and amortize it over a 40-year period. And we're well on that path. And we took a teacher's retirement plan who, in the late 80s, had about $300 million in assets, and today has has over $3 billion in assets because of the changes that we made in terms of the funding and the funding cycles, and to make sure that the funding is there, the legislature makes sure that the funding is there, and the governor makes sure the funding's there. And we're a watchdog on that. We make sure one of the first things we look at in the state budget is to make sure that adequate funding is available to retire that debt over a 40-year period. We have about 29 years left on that time frame, but the fact is we have made immense progress in our state in terms of retiring that debt.
Derek, any other questions for David Haney before we let him go?
No, great.
David, it sounds like you actually get to have your hands on this fund, that you're actually managing it, that's not outside managed.
Well, the fund is managed here in West Virginia by the West Virginia Investment Management Board, which was established in the mid-90s for the sole purpose of investing the funds. There are 13 members of that board. The governor, the auditor, the treasurer are ex officio members of that board, and I have had the privilege of being appointed to that board by the last three governors. And have served on that board as a watchdog over these pension funds and how they're invested. And if you look at the experience that the West Virginia Investment Management Board has had over the past several years, a couple of those years we were one of the top funds in the nation.
Wow. Well, let me, if you could just stay on for a moment here, let's take our first caller here, Don from Fairbanks. Don, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm a retired teacher, and I'm a Tier 1, been retired since 1993. The pension system was good. It was good for retirees, obviously. I'm speaking for that. I think it was also, returning to it would be good for the state of Alaska as far as hiring fire, police, teachers. You know, recruiting is very difficult now when you give people a choice between, well, when you've finished your work life, you'll have something that you can count on that's secure, or you'll have money that you may outlive that may be adequate or may not be. And then I would argue also that it's very good for the local economy. For teachers, at least for Tier 1, we have a 10% additional cost of living if we stay in state as opposed to retiring outside. Because we have the security of a pension and because we get the 10%, many, I think about two-thirds of retirees decided to stay in state. Our money gets recycled into the community. When times are tough, we're still spending money down at the local local stores. We're still spending it on local services. When the whole thing was put in to do away with pensions, it was kind of curious because the guy who brought it up was a Fairbanks legislator, and he said, "Oh, this is costing us $5-6 billion, $8 billion." He got a lot of statistics from Mercer, who the state's suing now. They were the former actuary, but the high cost was not the pensions; it was the health care plan that went back that was put in back in the 70s as a compromise to encourage teachers to stay teaching. I was teaching back in 1970 is when I started, and 1972-73, I think I was making about $13,600. By the way, I retired from teaching after 23 years. I did not go out on one of these bonus plans, and I ended up being a stockbroker for 11 and a half years. One of my colleagues graduated from high school down in Texas and moved up here in 1973, and his first year working up on the slope, he made over $80,000.
Yeah.
I'm not begrudging him that, but if I'd known about that, I might have quit my job and gone up to the slope too. Instead, I was about a third-year teacher, and I was just, you know, head down, going straight ahead, and so I figured, well, I'm making, you know, an adequate amount. I mean, I had bought a house on an FHA loan and everything, and so my family was just chugging right along. But the reason why the health care plan went in for people who retired and needed a bridge to Medicare was in order to retain teachers. Instead of giving us a $40,000 raise, they paid $65 a month and gave us a health care plan after we would retire, which for me at that point was, you know, sometime in off in the indefinite future.
The glories of Tier 1. Hey
yeah.
Don?
So they changed it to Tier 2,
yeah.
And they bumped up retirement age to a later date, but the health care plan has always been the big cost, because now it's over $1,000 a month instead of $65 a month.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons.
That's a problem nationally.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring the subject up at this time, where health care reform may be imminent and what effect that might have on this particular issue. But I'm fascinated with another thing, Don. Mm-hmm. And when Derek came in here, he said, you know, one thing that's been really surprising to me, taking on this responsibility as just a street cop, is older people like you and how much support they are giving to this cause. I mean, why are you not in the camp of, I've got mine, these guys are just SOL?
Well, I've got two daughters, I've got two grandsons, and they all live here in Alaska. And it's important what happens in the future here in Alaska. If they continue with this referred to as a 401k plan, where you can take the money that you put in, you can take the state's money that the state's put in, you can take the growth, and after 5 years go off to some place where you can get a real pension and you'll have a great grub stake, hey, that might be great for that individual, but it's not great for the state. You're going to have a revolving door of workers here.
All right. Thanks, Don, for your call.
Yeah, one question that I have, though, is when the whole idea of a 401k for private industry went into effect back in the 1980s, that was the time when there's a lot of corporate takeovers. And I would like to know if one of the reasons for doing that was because at that time corporate raiders were taking over companies, borrowing a great deal of money to buy them out, and once they bought them out, then they would take the pension funds that were just sitting around within the companies and use that to pay off their debt and then sell the company, and that's how they made a lot of quick bucks back in the 1980s. And so I'm wondering if the whole concept of the 401k was put in partially to help protect employees whose pension funds had been raided.
You just stay tuned, Don, because I think we're going to get around to that.
Oh, good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, Don from Fairbanks, retired teacher in at Tier 1. Of course, we would be, we're at Tier 3, I guess, or Tier 4. What is it, Derek?
Yeah, it's Tier 4 now for the new employees. Yeah. You know, Don brought up an interesting point about private competition. Earlier, I mentioned other police departments being a competition for our employees at the Anchorage Police Department. And I think it's really true for teachers, firefighters, and a lot of public workers. If you look at private sector pay for a lot of the jobs, when you're looking at a teacher with a master's degree, math or science, English, these trained professionals, there's a lot of attraction on the outside. And there is for police officers as well, even outside of police service.
Yeah, thank you. David Haney of the West Virginia Education Association, I don't want to keep you tied up here, but I just wanted to give you a chance to hear one of our callers here. It sounds like we have a situation where the some of the older retirees are very much behind this idea of restoring the pension.
Yeah, it did. And, of course, that was true here in West Virginia also. These folks who spend their lives in public service, whether they be teachers or service employees or police officers, understand the need to have a solid program to encourage people into public employment, because you're certainly not making the kinds of income that you would make out in the private sector. So, to develop a strong communities and strong community life, I think that it's important that folks get involved. And I was really pleased to hear that. As I said, the same thing happened here in West Virginia.
All right. Thank you, David Haney.
Thank you so much. You all take care. Good luck.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Yeah, well, it certainly takes a while to explain. At this point, I want to introduce our next guest. He's with us, I think, from his office in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Michael Lamb, that borough's chief financial officer, although he's speaking as an individual and not reflecting the position of the borough here. Right, Michael?
Yes. Yeah.
Michael, I'm wondering if you could shed any light on what our last caller I brought up, which was that maybe there was some kind of relationship. I understand that the law actually changed at a certain point, requiring a different amortizing equation for pension funds, and that contributed to this unfunded liability. Maybe you can enlighten me about that.
Well, with regards to Alaska's scenario, in fact, what drove it were what from all the analysis that I have seen and a lot of the testimony that was actually given to the state in different scenarios and even in the transition report to former Governor Palin, the rising health care costs and changes in assumptions and inaccurate accounting for medical liabilities, having too high a salary numbers, which is the basis to pay for the underlying pension costs, whether it be the pension and or the health care or not. But in essence, Alaska's case really is where the actuary medical costs weren't being kept track of, quite frankly, and we ended up with a huge unfunded liability. And of course, with that comes the dollars, a huge amount of dollars, and what to do about it, which is probably, you know, what has driven the DB to DC. But it's a real big question in terms of where the right direction is in the future, having listened to the other part of the other speaker's comments. And yeah, for us, it was a medical issue. It really was a misstatement of medical costs. And then the compounding effect from year to year to year, and to the point even where, and somebody had mentioned Mercer had gone to the state legislature and said, by the way, you're overfunded, and we think we can bring the funding down by expanding the medical benefits. And so the very thing that in the background was causing the system to go into red was compounded by adding additional medical benefits.
Absolutely fascinating. We've had Jim Duncan in here a couple of times. It would be really interesting to have him in the room here and hear his comment. You stay on the line there, Michael Lamb from Fairbanks, and Derek Schur, I believe we're done with you. Thank you very much
with
us.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck in your quest.
All right. Thank you.
All right. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home.
There has been enough time now to study this defined contribution versus defined benefit plan, and what seems to be the syndrome for these retirement funds is when people are allowed to control the investment of their retirement money themselves, they do not do as well as the professionals. It's as simple as that. It's like something like, I think, a 10-12% difference in yield that they just can't quite compete with the professionals. Do you know about studies like that, Michael Lamb?
Well, I think that history has shown that what you're saying is, in fact, the case. And one of my huge, when this whole issue of going from a DB to a DC came up, I really had three kind of time frames: short term, which was the budgetary impact we're all dealing with now; the midterm, which some of the discussion that I've heard really has to do with the ability to hire, to retain, to train. No matter what program or service we in the government sector provide, whether it's police, fire, teacher, librarian, parks and rec, animal control, it doesn't really matter. You still have to have the human capital, the human resources to provide that program and service. And so midterm, the issue of having human resources available is a big question and concern as a result of this. On the long term, is the same. My big concern is the ability of individuals to be ready for retirement, and I've heard just a few minutes ago some of those concerns. And the very basis of that concern comes down to the issue, the question that you raise. In the long run, individuals really, on an ongoing basis, really do not have the capacity or the capability or the knowledge, and it's not saying anything derogatory about people. We all have busy lives. We all have different things that we are very good at. But the ability to manage, make multiple decades long-term investment decisions is really beyond the scope of most of us because of the time constraints that we have and even the piles of money. And we talk about, you know, what would be the difference in terms of what a, for example, the Alaska State Department of Revenue, I think, does a phenomenal investing job. Now, if you take them as compared to even somebody like myself, and you think about what you have to decide, an individual must decide over multiple decades, over their life, for money they put away, do they talk about equity, or do they do fixed income? Do they do U.S. market, small cap, mid cap, large cap? Do they do foreign developed? Do they do foreign emerging? Should they put money in real estate, bonds, or TIPS? If they're going to do stocks, should they buy individual stock or a mutual fund or an ETF? Or fixed income, should they buy corporate paper, a bond, agency, treasury, CD, passbook? Should they use a broker, financial advisor, self-directed? And then what sectors maybe should they get into? Should they get into basic materials, conglomerates, consumer goods, financial, industrial, et cetera, et cetera?
You're making my head spin.
Well, and if you get past all that, then how many of us, you know, understand in terms of any of those investments they chose, the market risk, inflation risk, principal risk, credit risk, liquidity risk? You know, in the end, most of us, there probably isn't one in a thousand that have the skill set and everything else to do what we all talk about, which is we all say buy low and sell high over a lifetime. But most of us, as a matter of fact, simply do not have that ability. And therefore, I am a huge proponent, quite frankly, of a DB plan wherein people can go about their lives doing the things that they are interested in, that fit their nature, that give them enjoyment, that provide the greatest benefit back to society, and let an experienced somebody like Department of Retirement Benefits, or not Retirement Benefits, but Department of Revenue, whomever it is that has enough money that they can properly diversify it, that doesn't have the emotional impact involved in investing. In the end, if you take the same amount of money over, say, 3-4 decades, and you give it to an individual to invest, and you turn around and you give that money to a third party that is able to structure the investments using historical statistical analysis at the end of that time period, hands down, I bet that the professionally managed portfolio is going to have more money in order to pay for the retirement at the end of that period.
Well, I have to say that I've watched day trading that done by, it is day trading, and it wouldn't, I don't know if it's technically called that or not, but I've watched the bond traders that work for the Alaska Permanent Fund do their business really early in the morning. And they have advantages that no guy sitting in his pajamas is going to have. First off, they've got the squawk box going constantly with whatever the latest financial news is. But they also have a personal relationships with all these other traders. And they like sit there for the right moment in which to lock in their deals. I mean, you'd have to be full time in order to do that kind of thing. It's not something you could do sitting in your pajamas in front of your computer, you know, between 6 and 8 p.m. I wouldn't think.
No, and the thing about it is, too, that it's beyond that. Besides having a large enough pot of money to allow for diversification across, for example, U.S. equities and real estate and emerging markets and foreign developed markets and fixed and income and equities and whatever, But in most instances, for example, the way the Alaska set up with the ARM board, the mission of the investment of Department of Revenue, you know, they're not going to make money on the trades and stuff like that. Their job is to properly diversify using historic statistics, that to have a balanced portfolio that in the long run is going to put you in a good position. Above that, though, then you typically have a board, for example, like the ARM board does. They are a broad-based group of people that sit there and oversee, and their sole role is to make sure that the money and the investments are there for the benefit of the members of the either PERS, TERS, the GISA, whatever it is, but the members that are putting their money in for the retirement. And so not only is there the question of the individual capacity of a particular person, where they have the knowledge, where they have the technology, the market, whether they're emotionally attached to it, whether they have the historical statistics that says here's the likely outcome given a particular setup of investments. But above and beyond that, none of us, wouldn't it be nice if we all had a board that we could go to that would keep us on track when times are changing? And so, you know, it comes back to me again, the long-term issue. We are, I believe, as a society, way better off having a balanced, reasonable, defined benefit program that's managed in a proper and qualified manner. We're going to be far better off because in the end, society will somehow, some way, look after its residents. And I just think in total, in terms of total cost over a long time period, we are better off doing prudent investments over multiple decades than to not be doing that.
Well, let me ask you this, we're talking with Michael Lamb. He's a financial officer, and obviously has studied this very deeply in working for a municipality. It actually plays into his job, but in addition, he's just simply has studied it, and you're certainly a tremendous resource in this, Michael. What happens when you have a state retirement fund, and all of a sudden the new contributions are going out? In other words, all the new employees coming in are not paying into that anymore. The state is not paying in on their behalf. I mean, that must change the whole equation. And especially when you have it, theoretically, the fund probably took some pretty bad losses here when equities dropped.
Well, an interesting answer to your question, you can look at it from a couple of different ways. If you took a system, if you had a defined benefit system, and actuarial rates had been set properly, and the long-term investment was happening the way it's supposed to happen, for example, for our system, it's 8.25% is the long-term rate of return. If essentially no new employees came in and everybody retired, in theory, statistically and actuarially, you shouldn't have to put any more money into the system once those people retired, because the rates are set that if they have X number of years till they retire and they should live for X number of years, if you have fully funded up to that point in time, it shouldn't make a difference. Now, in this instance where the state of Alaska has an unfunded balance, for example, then if you stopped putting salaries into the system to not only pay for what's called the normal cost, in other words, the benefit that's going to be earned, for example, in the next year as you work, so you work a little bit longer, you make a little bit more money, and therefore your defined benefit amount goes up. The normal cost covers that. What happens under the scenario you're talking about is if you shrink the salary base, and a couple years ago, the salary base across the state, the municipality, school districts, was like $1.6 billion, somewhere in there. It's about $800 million state, $800 million-ish in salary between state and then all the other governmental employers. If that salary base does shrink and you do have an unfunded, it becomes a problem. Clearly, you need to have the money to pay that past unfunded, just like the gentleman for Jim was talking about over the 40 years. But I think how you pay for the past piece, though, in this discussion should not, in my view, direct whether DB or DC makes sense. Because we as a state already have an obligation, a contractual obligation, to pay for benefits that have been earned. right?
Yeah.
The question when you look forward is, presuming, because one of the big fears, and rightfully so, whether it's a state legislator, a local school board, a local council, local assembly, is, you know, how did we create this unfunded obligation, and therefore the normal human reaction is to say, I don't want to compound this, and I don't want to make it worse, and therefore I'm not going to do anything close to what I think may have caused this, which was, i.e., a DB plan, instead of looking at the DB plan and going, okay, and somebody had talked about a Tier 1 and some of the benefits. Well, there hasn't been any Tier 1 persons since, what, 1986, which is 23 years ago, and then even Tier 2 stopped in terms of PERS in 96. So this whole question about DB versus DC looking forward really has nothing to do with the historic unfunded obligation, because if everybody dropped out of the system, if everybody retired tomorrow, the obligation to pay those future benefits still exists. The question really is, what do we do for future, number one, and secondly, what do we do to make sure that the actuarial problems that created rates lower than they should have, didn't properly track the medical cost, that doesn't reoccur. And a lot of steps have really been taken in the state to take care of that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. We got Representative Paul Seaton on the phone from Homer. Representative Seaton, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi. Glad you guys are having this conversation, and I was really pleased with the police union's comments that they weren't having problems attracting or retaining personnel, because that is definitely opposite to what the advocates for maintaining a DB program were saying at the time we adopted the DC program. So it's nice to see that it turned out correctly, that the DC program was attractive for people to come in to the program and stay in the program. And in fact, the numbers, the actual retention rates, 2-year retention rates have been up significantly with the DC program over what it was for the last 2 years of the DB program. So it's good to know that people are looking at the actualities, and it was really nice to hear from West Virginia that they went away from their plan because it was improperly administered, and the timing, you could only change once a year, and they weren't having the solid education, which is not the case with the Alaska plan. I mean, you can change every day if you wanted. I am disappointed that Mr. Lamb is putting out the idea that you can day trade or you can be an investor, selecting stocks and bonds and individual things.
Well, I'm the one that brought that up, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, that is absolutely not true. You have 18 different investment managers which you can select under the DB plan that have all been selected by the PERS TERS board as being the responsible managers. Most of them have been hired and retained by the by the PERS TERS board or such since 2001, 1996, some of them have been long-term with the SBS, that's a supplemental benefits plan for Alaska. So these are long-term managers, and as an employee, you only get to select the professional managers and their scenario of investment. And you can balance that. You can take some in the long-term bond funds. You can take some in international equity funds, but you cannot day trade. You cannot select individual investments. And so this notion that that's a function of the state's DB or DC plan is just totally inaccurate, and I think that we ought to make sure that people realize that that's not part of our plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go to this question. One of the reasons I wanted to do this show at this time, and I have no idea what the what chance these bills have in the legislature next year. But I was just wondering if there is health care reform, and because this unfunded liability had so much to do with the health benefits, whether that might change the equation somehow. What do you think about that, Representative Seaton?
Well, actually, in 2003, when we started looking at it and the unfunded liability, 56% of the unfunded liability was due to health care, 11% was due to market performance for, you know, the investments, and the rest was due to the other factors, which are retirement. And it seems that people mix up health and longevity and like to throw longevity, our assumption, how long people will live, which is critical to the retirement function. They like to throw all that into, oh, it's health care and they're living longer, where actuality is if people live another 2 years, that's basically 20% or 10% unfunded liability we just created.
I see.
And so there's a lot of things that we... Here's the problem, is that we started with a Tier 1 system, and it lasted, from 1961 to 1986. And then we found that, oh, these benefits that we had calculated honestly and as accurately as we could not be funded with the contribution rates that were being taken. And so then we went to Tier 2 in 1986. And 10 years later, we found out, even though we did everything as accurately and with the best assumptions that we had, we were underwater again. And so it went to Tier 3 in 1996, because you could not fund in the future at the contribution rates you were taking the program that you had under defined benefit. And so then we went to Tier 4. 10 years later. Every 10 years, we find out that we've underestimated or our estimates have changed because the world changes. I mean, we can't estimate oil prices or gas prices for 2 years from now, and somehow we have this idea that we can actuarially go in and say, 30 years from now, when this person retires, we know how long they'll live, we know what the medical costs will be, we know what the cost of living that we're building into the system will be, and we know what investment returns will be, and expect that our kids and our grandkids will take that money that we didn't quite make there, take it out of the future budgets of the state or out of the future budgets of the municipalities to pay employees that were there 30 years ago, instead of doing what we should do and pay people high enough to attract them, retain them, give them benefits that we currently budget for, that will give them a chance for making a good retirement in the future. But to throw this all onto our kids and grandkids and say they have to reduce their budgets, they have to lay off policemen and firemen or lay off teachers so that they can take that money to pay people that retired 30 and 40 years ago, it's almost immoral when you come down to it, is what we're doing with our kids and grandkids in this defined benefit system, when we say we will throw onto their budgets and onto them mistakes that we make.
So, yeah, I don't think anybody wants to mortgage our future here.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the defined benefit plan does. It mortgages the future because we, unlike the steel mills and unlike the airlines or that can go bankrupt and get rid of those, or unlike other states, or even unlike unions. I mean, unions have gone, and now people are contributing into their retirement plan, and they're getting zero benefit from that because it's all going to pay for past unfunded liabilities in the union plan. So, but our state, our Constitution, and our Supreme Court have said that whatever you hire under first, whatever deal it is, that's fixed for your entire lifetime in employment and retirement in this state. And
right.
So our state is much more constrained than like Social Security. Social Security, the federal government can come in and say, we're going to change the contribution rate, we're going to change the what people are going to earn, we can change the retirement years. At any point in time, they can do that. We can't do that. Our state constitution says whatever is there when you hire in, you are guaranteed that for life. And
yeah.
So people need to know what we are throwing on our kids and grandkids if we're talking about going back to a plan that obligates them in their future budgets to pay for the mistakes that we make in guessing what life expectancy will be in the future.
All right.
I need
to take a break, and I want to thank you very much, Representative Seaton, for calling in. This is all really great. Thank you. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Communications Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business. ACS connects companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. Go deep inside Alaska, where the unparalleled meets the unexpected. Fairbanks emanates a quality of light, energy, and warmth found nowhere else on Earth. It's the unexpected Alaska. Fairbanks, located right in your own backyard, is full of activities from the mild to the wild. Experience summer's land of a midnight sun in Fairbanks. Information about attractions, travel, accommodations, and more online at explorefairbanks.com. This message sponsored by the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about retirement terms for public employees. We just heard from Representative Paul Seaton, and clearly he does not want to be mortgaging our future as a state. Let's go to Matt, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Matt.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for the great show today. I think you've had some good insightful information. I like especially Mr. Lamb up in Fairbanks. I'd like to clear it up right now and say that, first of all, a defined contribution is not a pension. A pension is something that's guaranteed for life, and these, especially how we've seen the stock market perform recently, I'm sure a lot of people had some hits to their defined contribution accounts that they'll never gain again, especially if they invested in AIG or one of those other defunct companies right now. But I personally counter Mr. Seaton's point. I think it's immoral that we would think about putting our retirees that have worked their entire life in the state of Alaska into a system that they could run out of money in their 80s or 90s, and that's what could happen. You know, you live too long, and tough luck, you're out of money, and you're going to be eating in the soup kitchen.
All right, Matt, we're just about out of time, and I think I want to let Michael Lamb have the last word on the show here. Michael, as you could tell, it looks like their leadership in the legislature isn't quite ready to pass this bill.
Well, I guess what I have to say would be this, and it reminds me of a quote my friend Gary Daly told me when I was at St. Paul, and I think it's very appropriate in this scenario, is that for every wise saying, there's one exactly opposite, no less wise. And this is an issue that everyone, I think, has the same concern about what happens in the future. And it's just going to take a lot of discussion, but for me, I still come back to, in the long term, as the gentleman just talked about, I worry about the social cost and the cost of children and grandchildren if we don't have money set aside for retirees when they get to the age that they should be.
All right.
And I just think individuals are not, in the end, capable of doing that.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael Lamb. Thanks to all of our guests today on Talk of Alaska. Next week, it's going to be Senator Mark Begich. Is he a blue dog or not? It's Pat Yak on the telephones. Thanks to Chris Sharp for volunteering today, and Gooseberry Peter on the controls. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.